Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
I feel like, you know, I can win. I've proven that I can do it. And I put myself there with a chance to, you know, win the last two major championships of the year last year. And I was right there and just needed to have a couple more things go my way and not throw away a couple shots here and there, which I was able to do at East Lake. And it just, I just feel like that I've improved a lot over the past about 12, 14 months, but I've more than anything, I've just proven to myself that I can play at this level again. And I've worked my way back into, you know, one of the players that can win events.
Tiger waits. It's interesting that
Middays on the Score.
I don't have to tell you who that was. I think you know. You probably know who this guy is, too. David Dusek is in the clubhouse at Augusta. He is on Twitter at golfweek_Dusek. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. David, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing great. And you've been watching some of the practice rounds here. You have a unique facility for determining who looks good, who are the horses to be following. Who's on your list right now?
You know, I think it's one of those tournaments that every year seems to favor chalk. And I think that with the weather conditions the way they are right now and with the course conditions being exceptionally soft, I mean, I walked around about 10 or 12 holes this morning, and the conditions are soft. It's going to look fantastic, as it always does on television. But if you get outside the ropes, there's a lot of mud and slippery areas and a lot of squishing around because we've got a little bit, about an inch and a half of rain over the last 2 days. It's beautiful today, but we've had a lot of rain, and that tends to favor the longer, bigger hitters. So you're looking at players like Dustin Johnson. You're looking at guys like Rory McIlroy, possibly somebody like Brooks Koepka or Bubba Watson, who's got a couple green jackets already. So it's going to be a big hitter's paradise. It always is. But I think this year, those are the types of players that are going to really excel, and I look for them to be probably right up near the top of the leaderboard right from day one.
I know the conversation starts with Tiger when you do an interview like this, but should it? I mean, you've got a couple of favorites there in the chalk. I don't know how you feel about where Tiger is right now.
You know, I don't know that I've seen enough consistency from Tiger over the course of this year. I mean, it would be a great story for him to win a fifth green jacket. Don't get me wrong. It would be the sort of penultimate or the last really sort of thing to the comeback that we saw. I mean, I was at East Lake during the Tour Championship back in September, and to see the crowds rushing behind him as he walked down 18 was unbelievable. And he would get tons of support from the patrons here, as he always does. But I have not seen him be able to put together, you know, three or four really good rounds of golf so far this season. He is an elite ball striker right now. His iron play is definitely worthy of somebody who should be considered. But I don't know that his putting has been consistent enough at this point. He hits the ball far enough, and you can spray it around a little bit here. There's no rough to speak of at Augusta National. There's a second cut, so if you miss the fairway, the penalty is much more that you have a bad angle, and then you're in deep rough that we associate usually with U.S. Opens. So you can get away with that, but I just don't know that his game has been sharp enough to beat, you know, so many people right now that are playing at an elite level. And really, the guy I'm thinking about is Rory McIlroy, and I think that's sort of the standard right now. And I think that McIlroy has an edge on Tiger, at least this week, as we play the Masters.
When I look at the storylines that I just want as a fan, I would love to be able to be rooting for Ricky Fowler on Sunday. I would, and I think a lot of people would agree with that. But that's just somebody who you want it to happen for him, and while he still is at the peak of his athletic powers, how far away is he?
Not far at all. Not far at all. I think that Ricky won earlier this year in Phoenix at the Waste Management Phoenix Open. He's the complete package. You know, he has knocked on the door here a few times. He was runner-up last year to Patrick Reed. He has played in the final groups in majors. He's played Ryder Cup. He has played President's Cup. He has done everything that contenders usually do before they finally break through. Every once in a while, we get somebody who just comes like a bolt of lightning and gets it. But usually, you have to sort of taste that pressure and that kind of circumstance before you finally break through. He's shot low rounds here at Augusta. He is somebody who I think could totally win, and he, I can also add, he would be one of the most popular winners in the clubhouse. As far as the other players, everybody would be very happy. Obviously, every player wants to win himself, but as you ask, like, who else or who would you like to see if it's not going to be you, Ricky Fowler would be one of the most, would be one of the first picks, for sure. Everybody's buddies with him, and it would be an enormous win for him and be a very popular one.
Masters starts tomorrow. We'll talk with David Dusek, who is in the clubhouse at Augusta. David, you can find him at golfweek_Dusek. I don't mean to take you into the golf's hot takery here, so I apologize if we head close to this, but Brooks Koepka's weight loss, 24 pounds, and I guess he's down 12 yards or so on the drive, still 15th on tour in terms of drive distance or average distance. Does it concern you? Does it bother you? Is that something that would take you off of the guy?
I followed him around earlier today. I mean, we were sort of talking about some of these guys. He's playing and finishing up his practice down right now. He's playing with Stuart Hovland, who's the reigning U.S. amateur champion, a guy from Oklahoma State who's buddies with Ricky Fowler, who went to Oklahoma State. The three of them were out there, along with Dustin Johnson. And it's a noticeable difference in seeing Brooks Koepka. I hadn't seen him in a couple of months. And to me, it's something that he was already supremely fit. And that was one of the real advantages, I think, to him. Not only that it helped him to hit the ball really far, but mentally, when you know that you were that fit, it gives you supreme confidence in the fact that you are able to overcome something. It's almost symbolic of the discipline and the work you've put into your craft. A lot of guys go out and hit buckets of balls and do that, and they've been doing it for years and years out here. But Koepka won his U.S. Opens with mental fortitude as much as with physical skills and that inner strength. And right now, to me, that's a big thing. If you've won three major championships over the last 2 years, as he has, two U.S. Opens and a PGA championship, you have clearly come up with a winning recipe for championship golf. And why you would tinker with that is beyond me. Mm-hmm. And anything, you know, of significance, like this amount of weight loss or change in your fitness regimen and your diet, to me is just hazardous. And if he isn't able to get himself back into fitness, he was living on 1,800 calories, and which is, you know, if you're somebody who medically needs to lose weight, that's another story. He didn't. And he's tinkering with something that he may look back on 10, 20 years from now saying, you know what, 2019 could have been good, but I screwed that up.
That's like skinny Duffner. When he lost weight, like, this looks weird, there's something wrong with this, and it didn't help him either.
There's a long history of guys who've lost a significant amount of weight who it really messed with their games. And sometimes you look at them, and it's probably better for their overall fitness and health. But as far as their game, I always remember there was a guy who lost a bunch of weight, and it was one of the things where lots of them, they've all gone to heck. Craig Stadler, who won here a Masters Championship, lost a bunch of weight. His game went to hell, and then he put the weight back on, and his game came back. Carl Peterson, this is a really funny one, was a good player about 10 years ago on the PGA Tour, won a couple of events, lost about 35 pounds. His game went away, and then he gained the weight all back and got his game back. And I asked him, well, how did you put the weight back on? He's like, oh, that's easy. I'll have a pint of Haagen-Dazs and a six-pack before bed every night. Putting weight on is easy. So, you know, it's. But in the other way, like, Koepka didn't need to lose weight. He was one of the fittest, if not the fittest guys, and prided himself on that. So anytime you, like I said, you tinker with success, to me that's just crazy.
You mentioned the mental fortitude being something that is as significant as physical, and it's amazing that for somebody as good at golf and as consistently competitive as Matt Kuchar is, there's something that we just don't include him in some of these conversations. Is that just because we don't think he has it in him one way or another?
I don't think that we necessarily reward consistency and having an overall good game the way that we reward people who have a spectacular aspect to their game. And when you watch Dustin or Rory McIlroy hit a drive, it's another worldly experience. I mean, these guys vaporize the golf ball. You can immediately see, like, oh, well, that's why this guy wins. And Jason Day, when he holds every putt, like, oh, that's how he gets done. That's how he wins tournaments. And when you watch Matt Kuchar play, he doesn't hit the ball as far as a lot of guys. He doesn't hit these towering iron shots, you know, like Tiger Woods does. He's got a nice short game. He makes putts usually, but he's one of those guys that has virtually no weakness. And the modern game is not necessarily built around players who have a complete, consistent game. It generally rewards guys who are spectacular at something and maybe they miss a cut here or there, but when they're on, they're just, you know, they're just off to the races. They're Secretariat. He is the exception. Mm-hmm. If you think back a few years ago, Luke Donald was another guy who reached number one in the world, and nobody ever thought he was, you know, the favorite to win a major championship because he was a plotter. He was somebody who made putts, chipped it around, kept the ball in play, and that his accountant was very happy because, like, you know, the guy could fall out of bed and get a top 10, a top 5, and Kuchar's the same way. But there's just nothing that arrests your attention with Matt Kuchar's game except for the fact that he is so consistently very, very good.
He's Joey Knish from Rounders. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, no top 10 finishes in the last 15 tournaments for Jordan Spieth, and yet he kind of owns that course. What do I do with Spieth?
You pay that man his money. You're going to go with that fellow Rounders thing. I think here's the thing. I wanted to pick Jordan Spieth coming into here. I really, really did because I believe in Jordan. And I look at the numbers and the analytics, and it just doesn't float through. It's one of those times where the numbers tell you that there's no reason why this player should be taken into consideration. And then I remember, oh, okay, well, in his Masters debut, he's a runner-up to Bubba Watson, and then he wins. And then last year he had a Sunday 64 and ends up, you know, falling a little bit short to Patrick Reed, but he was blistering. And there's something about playing this golf course that sets up well for him. But I don't think the golf course conditions being, like I said, pretty damp and the course is going to play long and soft. Certainly with Thursday, and we've got some weather that looks like it's going to come in probably on Sunday, that's not good for Jordan Spieth. I just don't know today if he's going to have the horsepower off the tee to keep up with some of the bigger guys. It's going to hurt him. If Jordan Spieth can somehow go out and shoot, for example, 68, which is a 4-under par round, it's a very good round of golf, but it's certainly attainable. If he can shoot 68 Thursday, he's in the last group with Paul Casey and Brooks Koepka. They're going off at 2:00 Eastern time, the last group of the day. If he can do that and be in the tournament to start with, it gets very, very interesting. But if he struggles and shoots 72 or 73, he's not necessarily out of it, but I don't see him coming back. I see him being a force from the beginning and staying there or not really being a story at all.
I'm surprised we haven't gotten to John Rahm yet, if you're talking about guys with the distance who – like, John Rahm is going to win a major.
Yeah, he is.
And, you know, and Tommy Fleetwood is going to win a major at some point. Assess the possibility that this could be that one for either of those guys.
I want to see John Rahm get into the heat of it at a major championship and not go loco on the cabeza.
Yeah.
He just gets in his own way mentally. We have seen that too many times. We saw it in the Players where his caddy is just, you know, giving the side eyes when he's playing out of a bunker and he's going for a sucker pin because he is one of the two or three most talented players on the planet when it comes to hitting a golf ball the way that he wants to hit it. He's great. I mean, and I don't use that word. He is a great golfer. He can play stupid shots, and that's the problem. And then he emotionally lets his head get the better of him, and he will readily acknowledge that. It's something he set out as being a goal for the season. He needs to prove it to me, you know, when the chips are all in the middle of the table to go back to Rounders. As far as some of the other guys, Tommy Fleetwood, he hasn't won a PGA Tour event, which doesn't mean he won't, because he will. He's won in Europe, but it'd be pretty amazing to have your first win on U.S. soil be the one that everybody covets the most. It's almost like the story would be too good to be true. But he's great. And his caddy's a funny guy. I've gotten to know them a little bit over the course of the season. He's really talented and a super guy, and if he was born in the U.S., he would be one of the most popular guys in golf out there right now. And I think over time, people will realize the talent. They just haven't seen him here play in the U.S. enough. Unfortunately, he's going to be a part of the European Ryder Cup team for about the next decade,
yep.
And he's going to kick our butt when the chips are on the table for that.
So if I'm reading this right, David, the weather here and the soft conditions that might occur because of it has the field of possible champions for you about as wide as any tournament we've all talked about in the last year and a half.
Yet you say it favors chalk. How do we balance those things?
Okay, so let me give you an example. So here are the last three groups that are going off tomorrow. So 138, 149, 2:00. Dustin Johnson, Bryson DeChambeau, Jason Day, followed by Phil Mickelson, Justin Rose, Justin Thomas. Last group, Jordan Spieth, Paul Casey, Brooks Koepka. Any of those guys would be capable of winning the Masters.
Wow.
That's chalk. That ninesome right there is an unbelievable group. Those guys could do it. If you look around, there are other players in there that I just don't feel like. I don't think this is Matt Kuchar's kind of a track. I don't think he's long enough, and I don't think he makes enough birdies to be able to do this. Some of the other players, Francesco Molinari.
Your guy, you were all over him. You gave us Molinari.
And I don't think this track sets up well enough for him. He won't back up. But if the golf course is going to play the way I think it's going to play the first 2 days, you're going to need to shoot some pretty good shots. You're going to need to make birdies. And I don't know, even as confidently as he's playing right now, and he should be confident, I don't see him making as many birdies as Ricky and Rory and DJ and possibly Rahm if he gets it going.
Before we let you go, you mentioned DeChambeau, and I don't understand some of the stuff he says because it's just beyond me.
Anybody else.
Well, then I'm going to ask you to do the impossible and translate Bryson DeChambeau, and he was talking about the moisture.
Yep.
And he said it's not – he said for him – it's the humidity or the moisture in the air affects the way the ball comes off the face of the club.
What?
And that there's distance control based on that elastic impact between the sweet spot and the ball. What is he talking about?
Eight. Here's the way that I can translate it to some degree, and I'm not going to pretend to be able to get into this guy's head because nobody can. But when the air is humid, the ball travels less far because the water vapor that's in the air creates more drag. So if you go out into the desert, for example, you go on vacation, you go to Phoenix, and you hit your normal drive, you're going to probably hit it through the air 10 or 12 yards longer than you do on a muggy day back in Chicago. If you're playing up at Thunderhawk or something like that, you're not going to get the carry. Here in Augusta today, it's crystal clear, blue skies, it's great. And the ball is going to carry nicely. It's sunny. It's wonderful. It's going to hit the soft ground and stop. I mean, it might even plug because it's so soft out there right now. I think what DeChambeau is saying is that when you get water, for example, between the ball and the face, it tends to knock spin off. The ball doesn't spin as much on every club.
It knuckles out of there, okay.
And so you hit this powerful, high knuckleball. And if there's water vapor in the air, it's gonna sort of lose a little bit of distance. But if it's dry in the air but wet on the ground, the ball can really take off because you have a lot less spin.
I'm still incredibly confused.
I'm going to stick with X equals 8, sir.
Makes as much sense as anything else.
This is fun stuff. Really looking forward to this tournament. We always look forward to your appearances before the big ones here on these airwaves.
Hey, Dave, I've been down here in Georgia. I'm sorry. I know we're about to go long. Do we know anything about Lester?
He'll miss a start or two, injured list, and if they bang the game tonight, David, it looks like they might be able to get out of this month with just skipping one of John Lester's starts. So hopefully,
as the lone Cubs fan in Central Connecticut, let me tell you, I'm keeping a low profile for right now, but I have high hopes.
Ride out the storm.
Yes,
out the storm.
I will.
David, thank you.
Thanks a lot, fellas.
That is David Dusek, always sensational. He of Golf Week. You should follow him on Twitter at golfweek_Dusek, senior writer and course rater for Golf Week.
Stupid weather. Thought I was going to get a winner from Dusek this morning.
Yeah, well, he laid it out for you.
Probably bet somebody. I almost always do. It's not going to be Brooks Koepka because I didn't want him to have to wade into the hot takery of the Golf Channel like it's been for the last week and a half with Koepka's weight loss and stuff. But it's worth asking the question when you drop 10 to 12 yards off the drive. And if it's out of pure vanity, what the hell?
Joe Madden was on yesterday with Lawrence Holmes on these airwaves, as he is every Tuesday at noon. And he was hitterish yesterday. Madden was given some scouting reports on some of his guys that I think are worth revisiting a bit.
Yeah, we got a couple of streaks in baseball as well. I'll tell you which ones matter and which ones you can just kind of yell at us at. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670, The Score.
He's really trying to stay middle off field, just like I'm talking about. He's trying to see, he hit that one hard line drive. He got out in front at the shortstop his first at bat. But the big thing, a lot of times when a guy really wants to find himself, you got to almost try to jam yourself, believe it or not. And when you jam yourself, you're really taking your bottom hand to the ball correctly. And when you're never getting jammed, that's actually not a good thing because you're probably coming around the ball, which really does not permit you to cover the outer reaches of the plate well.
Well, chew on that. You're talking about Chris Bryant, right?
Very hittery stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Hawk Harrelson actually used to talk about that, about when in a slump, jam yourself.
And those two dudes get hitting. There's no doubt about it. They've got resumes that support it. Chris was talking to us at Scorehouse Week about keeping that back elbow tucked in and all that kind of stuff. Perhaps that's, you know, different languages, but the same general concept to try and hit a little bit better. You and I were talking what was it, Monday and Tuesday, about Bryant's inability to hit breaking stuff, some off-speed stuff over the last little bit. Maybe it's the injury, maybe it's a trend, but getting jammed and hitting for a little bit of power because of it would be a good thing for Chris Bryant with the start he's been off to. Joe was great with Lawrence yesterday and mentioned a couple of different things. Wanted to bring a few cuts to you. Kyle Schwarber, when we were at the game on Monday, Dan, hit a mammoth home run.
Oppo.
Instantly, that ball was out of the ballpark. I mean, that was one of those, you heard the noise and all four of us, Lawrence and you and me and Danny, were like, yep, it's gone. It's absolutely gone. Joe talked a little bit about Schwarber, his new/old stance, and his desire for the left fielder to go opposite field.
We've been on this for a couple of years now, and it's one of those things, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. He did a lot of good work in the offseason, and I know you could tell the difference in his setup right now in the batter's box.
He's a little lower.
Yeah, he's a little lower. He's into his legs more, and the technical term would be staying behind the baseball better. He used to, last year or two, more upright, more like a little bit of a tripod, and just his first step, he would step with his front foot and kind of get the weight too much on the front side. Now, if you can imagine, you reach with your stride foot, your front foot, and you stay behind that foot, and power stays in place, and that's what he's doing. So, I really would hope that he doesn't hit one home run right down the right field line all year. I prefer that his right field foul line would be right center. If you could draw a line from second base to right center and move it from there onto the left field foul line, if he stays in that part of the field all year, he's going to have a great season.
Yeah, I mean, if you're hitting four power to that side of the ballpark, that should work out well for Schwarber.
And that means that if, in fact, something he does get a cement mixer that's in the zone, and that's when you spin on it.
Yeah.
That's when if you're able to hit the good stuff exactly where Joe Maddon is saying, then you become a devastating mistake hitter to the pull side.
Crush mistakes. That's what power hitting can be based. Well, in the era where the ball wasn't so juiced, that's what power hitting was based on. One of the options for the Cubs as they try and fill out the rotation with John Lester on the injured list, is perhaps Tyler Chatwood.
Ugh, no.
I'm not thrilled
Don't
with it.
Do that.
But Lawrence did due diligence and asked Joe where Tyler Chatwood is with things lately.
If we get this guy on a roll, there's no telling what he can do. His ball, his pitches move that much. He's going up to 96 right now. He's got a great curveball cutter. He also could drop a changeup in there when it's necessary. His stuff is that good. Don't be deceived by this. We just have to get him more consistently in the zone. And this will be on there. You talk about a great athlete. This guy could hit. He could run. I this might sound weird, but I think he's one of the best at getting off the mound and moving around and actually even covering first base. He's very athletic. So we get him in the zone with his confidence coming up. Anything can happen with Tyler.
It does sound weird. It does. It sounds weird.
It does sound weird.
And I tell you what.
We know he's
got 53 years.
Yeah, the stuff is great. We know that. But you don't have to cover first on a walk.
No, that is not necessary.
He's a great athlete. I think he's one of the best at covering first base.
Most would call that eyewash, though, if you were hustling over to first on a walk.
Come on.
I don't think that'd be – I honest to God, I don't know what they're going to do to add a guy into the rotation. Joe mentioned when he was talking with Lawrence that – you know, some of that's going to be up to the front office. They get to pick the dude from AAA if they want to bring in a starter or whatever, or start Chatwood or make a day a bullpen game.
Don't start Chatwood. It's going to suck.
Probably.
It's going to – and it's just –
So would 9 innings of their bullpen.
It's miserable to watch.
That'll include 3 innings of Chatwood.
Right. Yeah. Well.
It's the same either way, whether you start him or not. You know, I think you can kind of expect that. Maybe that's where we're missing something. Is if you go bullpen day or Chatwood start, either day consumes 3 innings of Tyler Chatwood with the Cubs right now.
Bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz in the Big Ten West Division and Holiday Bowl champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Iowa, Michigan State, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. I just can't do it. I'm at my wit's end watching Chatwood. Because you remember we sat there and they said, well, you know, Tommy Hotovy, the pitching infrastructure, the Rapsodo cameras, and Edgertronics, and
Kinetrax,
and we know exactly what we can do. And he's fixed it. And he was punching his hand out toward third base.
He was punching. There was punch.
With the a glove tap, and he's not going to do that anymore, and everything's going to be fine. I don't know what happened. I don't know when this all went sideways and what they thought they could fix, but it's not fixed.
Tyler Chatwood, of course, is not a qualified pitcher right now in terms of leaderboards.
No, just leave it at that.
No, I mean, in terms of leaderboards, I'm not taking that kind of shot at the guy. I'll do that after a couple more appearances. Michael Wacha, though, leads Major League Baseball with 9.26 walks per nine. Jake Arrieta is second at 6.23. If Chatwood's 7.20 walks per nine qualified, it would be second in the big leagues, pushing Jake Arrieta down to third.
Yeah, I mean,
that would do.
You start looking at his, and Madden said throwing the ball well, okay? It's a 7.20 ERA, 7.20 walks per nine. His FIP is 6.01.
That's the Cubs bullpen.
His WHIP is the same exact 1.80 that it was last year when he was historically bad. And his hard contact rate, even with all this great stuff, this year is 46.7%. That is not throwing the ball well. That is bad at pitching. How is that throwing the ball well?
It's not. It's not. It's just not.
But he said he's been throwing the ball well.
I don't know
you're
what else.
You're lying to me.
Yeah, but I don't know what else you're going to say. I mean, we've talked about the depth or lack thereof in terms of starting pitching for the Cubs for a little bit now. You've got five. And Mike Montgomery's on the injured list. If you want to make him six, if you want to say that the Cubs have six, that's great.
After they told him he was
injured.
But
he's hurt.
I am?
Yes. He is now hurt.
Yes.
Can't be used. Speaking of a guy that they're going to need coming back from AAA sooner rather than later, even though many Cubs fans may not want to see him, they need Carl Edwards back. But they need the good version of Carl Edwards. He's thrown an inning and a third at AAA and actually looked pretty decent. Three strikeouts, gave up two hits. One was a bleeder and one was against an extreme shift, so take that for what you will. No walks. And Joe talked a bit about what Carl needs to work on in AAA.
To do simple better, to simplify everything. It's just gotten to the point where he's just trying to do too many different things, and he doesn't need to. This guy almost got the last out in the World Series a couple of years ago. Did a really great job at the last part of that game. So he's pitched in some really high-stakes situations. Great. I want Carl versus the better left-handed hitters because he's that good. So it's about, again, I use the word confidence. It's about confidence simplification. And stop worrying about throwing strikes, and you will. I mean, when you get, it's just one of those, it's the paradoxical intent. You try not to, then, of course, you're going to throw balls. So I want him to just chill, simplify his delivery, become more visceral, primal in what he's doing out there. Stop trying to be so perfect. His ball cuts naturally. It's kind of like a Mariano Rivera pitch. It's that good, or Kenley Jansen. And right now it's not getting that same effect because he's just trying to guide it into the strike zone.
Now, easy with Mariano Rivera and Kenley Jansen.
Yeah, the comps there are kind of, it's a high quality scotch. But I do think he's right when it comes to Carl Edwards and his issues. They're between his ears. It's not necessarily a delivery thing or a talent thing. He's always going to be a little wild.
Which isn't necessarily bad.
Not if you're getting swings and misses outside the strike zone, which Carl Edwards Jr. has done in the past. He is one of the very few pitchers that gets swings outside the strike zone for the Chicago Cubs. They need him to get back to doing something like that.
There are a couple streaks in baseball that are ongoing right now that I wanted to address real briefly when we come back, just to see sort of what matters in these things.
Yeah, some things to look at. And if you want to make some money, maybe you keep betting on some of these streaks.
Ah.
Or you fade them if you can find a way to do that. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
Thanks to Mike Florio and David Dusek for joining us today. Zawoski, Camp and Diaz, the producers, Brian Gertz, the video feed, Kevin Zipak in the updates. Tomorrow, Len Casper and Mark Schanowski. The Bulls season will be over. And we'll be able to talk to Mark about what it all was. I don't think it was really much anything. Truly. We've gotten all the way back around to this and not much closer to winning a championship.
No, not really. Hey, two streaks going on in baseball right now. I want to know what you think of both of them. I'm a fan, and I think these are actual streaks. Going back to August 21st of last year, however, Tommy Pham has a 40-game on-base streak. It is a Tampa Bay Rays record. He is in the lineup against the White Sox this afternoon. He is batting second. Legit streak, 40 games spread over two seasons.
Yeah.
Good to go? Okay, fair enough. Tommy Pham, who Dark Horse MVP odds, by the way, if you'd gotten him this season. Interesting. Very interesting numbers.
What, 200-1? What was it?
No, I think it was like 340 or something like
that.
Wow. Whit Merrifield. Whit Merrifield has a hit streak. He ties.
Whit
Merrifield. Yeah, that's
cool whip.
Cool whip. He ties the longest hit streak in Royals history.
Okay,
at 30 games.
30 games.
It started September 10th of last season. Does that start? Does that count as a hit streak?
I think by rule it does.
By rule it does. Yeah. But if he gets to 56,
yes,
over two seasons, see, for me, I get a little, I don't know about that.
I think so. Wait, so he's tied the Royals record.
Which is Brett. George Brett.
I was going to guess.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, because
that's George Brett. Guess George Brett.
Is it George
Say
Brett?
George, it's George Brett.
Yes,
got it.
I knew it. It's not Amos Otis or Frank White.
It is not.
Or Onyx Concepcion.
Why would it be him? I don't have the lineup for the Mariners and Royals yet. They play tonight, so I couldn't tell you whether Witt's in the lineup, but I bet he is. I think they're both legit streaks.
Or is this streak at Witt's end?
God. Sorry. Transition is next. Lawrence is on the way. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
He's here. He's ready to go. Lawrence Holmes. It was good stuff with Joe Maddon yesterday. We just played a bunch of it back. He was really in the mood to talk hitting. That was very solid, honest stuff about his hitters. About Chatwood, not so much.
Well, he's got a PhD in hitting.
Yes,
so
he does.
I like talking. I actually like when Joe is kind of coachy. It's fun because you learn stuff and you learn what are the things that he's looking at when he's watching the game. Or what maybe are my eyes deceiving me when I see something that's going on and then I have it either, you know, denied or confirmed by what Joe is seeing. So that's good. And did you guys, I'm sure you didn't play this part because this part was not germane to anything, him dunking on Tony yesterday.
No.
So we threw out the debate, and we decided that we're going to ask at least one fun question of Joe.
Okay.
So we threw out the chocolate chip cookie oatmeal raisin cookie debate.
Oh, well, this is an alley-oop. It's like, you know.
And Joe straight up dunked on Tony. Like, it was tremendous. Like, it wasn't just, I prefer chocolate chip.
Yeah.
It was people who think they're being healthy because they're eating oatmeal raisin cookies are ridiculous, and you're going to choose chocolate. Like, it was almost as if I was talking to Joe, the caller, instead of Joe Maddon, the manager. He had long thoughts on chocolate chip versus oatmeal raisin. I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, I'm with him. I think if you go to Cookie Graphs and you just look at actual value, there's no question in the world. But you know what? Sometimes I'm not sure if Tony says things to plant his flag in Hot Takeville in different places.
He's just that guy. That's the thing about Tony, is that it's not an act. It's him.
There's a time and a place for an oatmeal raisin cookie.
There's
a time and a place, but it's for one oatmeal cookie. And the power rankings of cookies, oatmeal it's like a thousand.
Joe said,
so low on the list.
Joe said, why would you want some dried up fruit in your cookie? And the look on Tony's face yesterday was phenomenal. Because he was destroyed. Like, he thought for sure he had an ally in Joe.
No.
He had it up on the screen.
Man snatched
Ask him about the cookie. Ask him about the cookie. And then when I asked him, it did not turn out well for Tony. Or apparently, as he's being called these days, Tone.
That's happening?
Really?
Yeah.
That's a thing? We're making Tone happen?
No. We're not making it happen.
Who's calling him Tone?
Jim Boylan is making that happen.
Oh.
Okay, so Tone.
Tone's across his chest.
By the way, Jim Boylan at every press conference lately has been, why is he so emotional? It's like he seems like he's on the verge of sobbing at every press conference.
The journey, man. He's overwhelmed.
But the guy's like, dude, what's wrong with you?
I mean, Tone, do you have any insight on this?
I mean, he takes forever to leave the locker room after games. And it's like, it's ridiculous. Like last night, it's like, what do you have to say to these guys? Really? Everybody that matters has already left the building.
You're talking a bunch of G leaguers.
Yeah. And he's having like some type of emotional connection with these guys that he probably won't see ever again in his life. It was so weird. And then he comes out, he's like out of breath, and it's like he just had an entire monologue. It was weird.
Look, he and Walt Lemon are going to be hanging out on the South Side. That is going to be a thing.
It's like a buddy cop film.
Sure, a terrible one.
that's really bad.
It's across to their chest. That's the name of the movie.
We have U.S. Marshals across our chest. We literally do. That means we can barge in there.
You find that man.
How is your spirit? My spirit is full and strong. I have a pure heart.
Clear eyes.
That's his bit. It can't be real. It really can't be.
Well, Tone says it is.
Okay.
Seems earnest.
So I guess it is. What the hell is going on in Los Angeles?
It's amazing.
Oh, my
it?
God.
It's amazing. The guy spent 6.5 minutes telling to the media this thing that he couldn't tell his boss. He positioned himself as doing the honorable thing while letting everybody know that he sucks at his job.
And doesn't want to do it anymore.
And quits.
Not interested.
It's amazing.
The big not interested
it's
out.
Amazing.
But why was he interested in the first place? He was right. He had a great life being Magic Johnson and being on Twitter and saying things to people and doing stuff. I was like, now I'm going to go pretend to be an executive. I never understood it in the first place.
I think that there are a lot of those guys imagine that job is more of an ambassador role than a functioning CEO role.
But anybody who goes to get – if his one thing was go get me LeBron James.
Well, he did that.
That's
then
right.
You quit.
But that's – you don't have to be the president of basketball operations to get that done, A. You just don't. And second, if you're the president of basketball operations of the Lakers, you have to know that just doing that and nothing else isn't enough. You've seen that happen before with LeBron. He didn't win a championship when it was absolutely nothing else. And he's 30 now. And he's 33 now or whatever. You know, what is he? He's 6 months older than me, so he's 34 now. I mean, that you can't do that anymore.
I always wonder if guys do think that there isn't work in the job, and those jobs are incredibly taxing.
Oh my God, John Paxson has aged like a president.
Oh my, I was at a game a few weeks ago, and I was looking out, and I saw like the Bulls box, and I saw Pax like sitting by himself with the rest of the box dark, and I'm like, There has to be a happy medium.
No, he's Prince Hamlet.
There has to be a medium between Magic being like, all right, well, I'm going to go to Hawaii for 6 weeks.
Finger guns everywhere.
And Pax just like grinding himself into dust game in and game out. Somewhere in there is the way that the job is supposed to go and be okay.
We talked to Theo about it. How he balanced it. He doesn't really let people into some of these things.
Unless it's Wright Thompson.
Yeah, but mentioned like there's breathing. I don't know if it's full blown meditation, but there are techniques to make sure that you can be in a reasonable headspace when the weight of the world is on you.
But I will say this about the front office of the Cubs and even the front office of the White Sox.
Wait, that and beer.
They have fun. Like, when was the last time? Real talk. When was the last time you saw John Paxson have fun at his job? When was the last time you saw Pax smile?
When he was an assistant coach.
They got the number one pick.
When he was a broadcaster, he was great. When he was an assistant coach and we were traveling with him, he was awesome.
No,
here. You mean
Dan,
this job?
No. With the job that he's been in for the last 16 years.
When they got the number
one
pick.
When was the last time you saw John Paxson happy?
I don't know. You don't see him all that much.
And when you see him, he's never happy.
Right.
And I think he wants so badly for this thing to work that he thinks that I'll just work harder and harder and harder. And you keep digging this hole, and then you look up and like, I'm in this hole, and this hole sucks.
How did I get here? Why am I holding a shovel?
Why am I still in this hole? It would be nice to see him occasionally like have some joy in the job. But I guess you got to start winning to do that.
Getting the number one pick again and being happy would be really nice.
Purity of heart, quality of spirit.
Well, whatever you want across your chest.
Maybe that's why he needs Jim Boylan around. Maybe
Jim's like the spiritual guru.
Because Jim is so positive. Like, no matter what.
But he's so weird.
But maybe
the guy was positive about a mutiny. Of course he's positive.
That was a good thing.
We did it, guys. We cut the news. We did it.
The guy could be positive on a mineshaft explosion, right?
We knew it was coming, so we could be really happy about this.
Yeah, he's also really.
Did you see the way these guys threw people off the boat? What a mutiny.
Jim Boylan's buying Boeing stock. He's very, very happy about the whole nosedive setting on the 737s. He's taking that as a positive. You can build from that.
It's Maybe that's what it is. Because, like, imagine, like, looking at Gar Formday. Because there's another guy who seems to be joyless. And then you're packed, and you're like, where am I going to get some happy from? Where? Yeah. I mean, you weren't going to get it with Tibbs, right? Like, that whole time, you weren't going to get that.
No, there's no happiness.
He's a Dementor.
So, you're thinking it'd be Fred, but Fred's kind of, you know, low-key, low-energy guy.
Yeah, but Fred's got that vibe.
For medical reasons.
Yeah, but Fred's cool, though.
No, Fred
Doctor's
is cool.
Doctor's orders.
But maybe that's what this is. Maybe Jim Boylan brings joy into that building. And positivity. Maybe.
He needs to bring more things.
Yeah, that's not enough things.
I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, this whole season, it's been a treadmill to nowhere.
Yeah, I would say that is,
this is
correct.
It. This is it. The season ends and...
Hey, maybe the Bulls will get a little Blackhawks love. And then they move up in the draft lottery and boom, steak dinner.
Was it weird for me to have the thought? It's like, welp, there's the Chicago draft lottery luck.
They're out now.
And
That's it.
There's a finite. It makes no logical sense. I understand that. But I can't lie to you that a part of me was like, it was for them.
So they're going to take away a pick.
They're going to pick ninth now, even though they're not allowed.
The NBA has decided that the Bulls will get no pick this year. Yeah. Wait, what?
Sorry. What? I don't know what to tell you. It's
not
just the
happening.
Way it came out.
Nope. You're going to get the guy from Texas Tech. And that's going to be that. Here comes Culver.
That's what I told Tone yesterday, that he better take a long look at Jared Culver because he's going to be in a Bulls uniform someday.
Yep.
Soon.
Grinding on defense.
Yes. Well, gentlemen, thank you as always.
Have fun. Man,
go fantastic. Get
we really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.